Bonjour, salut tout le monde. Bienvenue à Happy Hour. Aujourd'hui, nous présentons une nouvelle co-présentatrice.
Oops, this is not a French show. So, let's try that again. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Happy Hour. 欢迎你又回到酒馆。刚才是不是有种乱入的感觉？突然一下英文听不懂了。Well, actually, that was my attempt to try to speak a little bit of French. And do not laugh at my accent. The reason why I started the show like this today is because today we are having with us a new co-host, Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Well, Sarah has a very interesting identity. Sarah, you now have dual nationalities, right?
Yes.
Britain and France.
Mm-hmm.
And you also lived for a very long time in France and also fluent in French. So, so today we're going to talk to Sarah about her interesting experience in France and all these cross-cultural tips. So, Sarah, could you introduce yourself? Maybe give us a little bit of self-introduction in English and then in French?
Okay, no problem. Perhaps I could start with French first and you can see if you understand.
Okay. Testing my listening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bonjour tout le monde, je m'appelle Sarah, j'ai 31 ans et je suis originaire de Bristol dans le sud-est de l'Angleterre. Je vis actuellement à Pékin et je suis professeure d'anglais.
Okay. I think I can understand like 80%
okay, yeah.
of that.
It was quite a simple one, but that's really good. So I said my name's Sarah and 31. I come from Bristol in the southwest of England, but I'm currently living in Beijing, which is why I'm doing this podcast. I'm an English teacher here, but I'm going to be going back to France next summer.
Mm. So let's start with a little bit about your background, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you grow up? You grew up in Bristol, did you say?
Yeah, so I was born basically in the southwest, quite close to the Midlands, in a place called Worcester. I moved to the Bristol area when I was fairly young as well. So I didn't really grow up in a multicultural environment. The villages that I lived in were mostly white British, to be honest, and my schools were relatively similar as well. So although some people growing up attending international schools might have a variety of nationalities amongst their friends, I probably only knew a couple of people who did not have white British backgrounds.
Mm. Before we did this whole program with Anlan, and then he was telling us about the British school system, that you had a choice of learning, for example, French or German.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So as a child in primary school, when I was going through it, you didn't really have any access to language courses because I guess it wasn't the
most important.
Yeah, the most important type of class at the time. But as soon as you get to secondary school, so when I was in the school system, 20 years ago, we were given the option to study French or German. So I started with French. I think most children studied French at secondary school. When we got to our GCSEs, we got to choose a second language if we wanted to. And I actually didn't choose German. The German teachers asked if I would participate because there weren't enough people in the class and they knew that I rather liked learning languages. So I ended up studying a bit of German for a couple of years as well. I don't think I knew anybody who was bilingual growing up, or at least not that I was aware of. But my mum had travelled a bit when she was younger, and she seems to be able to pick up languages relatively easily.
So it runs in the family.
I don't know, perhaps. Yeah, she certainly instilled a certain tolerance of ambiguity. We talk a lot about that when with regard to learning languages, that if you want to be really successful, particularly when you're starting out, you need to be able to accept those ambiguous communication situations.
Not always being 100% correct.
Yeah. It's the idea that you don't always understand everything that's being said, and they might not understand a lot of what you're saying either. When you're starting out, it doesn't always matter.
Yeah, I think the overall communication is always the most important thing.
Absolutely.
So you started learning French when you were in school,
mm-hmm.
and then a little bit of German afterwards. But when was the first time you went to France?
Well, because the UK is so very close to France geographically.
Guess everyone.
I think Brits, particularly since air travel has become cheaper and because I live in the south, does mean that access to mainland Europe is it's quite easy. And I was lucky enough to grow up in a family where they thought that traveling was beneficial.
Mm.
My parents did take us on a couple of kind of budget weekend breaks to France before. So I did visit Paris as a teenager. And so I had, my parents always encouraged us to try and speak a little bit of the language.
Ah.
But when you feel like you have to perform, it's kind of embarrassing.
Pressure.
Yeah, the pressure is quite unpleasant. So if they might say to a, you know, when you're sitting in a restaurant, they'll ask you to order your food in French. But it feels embarrassing when you've got people watching you. So,
exactly.
So I know that me and my sister, I don't think we enjoyed it that much.
But talking about Paris, you know, Paris, I guess for a lot of our listeners who have never been to Paris, and also for that matter, for a lot of people who haven't been to Paris around the world, they would have this almost picture perfect perception of Paris. So what's your first impression of Paris? Like, honestly.
I think whenever you go anywhere that is somewhat romanticized, you're going to be disappointed. I think I had the same when I went to London as well. Because the way it's portrayed in the cinema, in the media, it's obviously when you're getting off the tube in London or when you're getting off the dirty metro in Paris. It's not as romantic as it seems. You know, if you see someone, I don't know, urinating in the tunnel, that's not very romantic.
Yeah, I have to say that the first time I went to Paris, I felt the same. Mm. I didn't really, really high hopes, but I still found, for example, really the metro, and you could smell the urine.
Yeah,
like,
it's dirty.
Yeah, that's a bit of a put off.
It's an efficient transport system, but it's dirty.
Yeah,
yeah.
Especially when you get used to some of the better, more modern transport systems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah. Okay, so, but you did not have, like, experience with the best impression, first impression of Paris or France for that matter. But why did you decide, or when did you decide to go to France for a longer period of time?
So I guess the origin of the decision was that I enjoyed French at school. I took it at A level. And then when I was deciding what I wanted to do with my life as a teenager, I wasn't quite sure, but I knew that I was interested in finding out more about the world in general.
Mm.
I felt like I didn't know enough. So I studied French and international relations at university.
Really? Mm.
And so obviously part of the sandwich course is quite a popular format for undergraduate degrees in British universities. So as part of my university degree, I had to spend a year abroad.
Abroad.
Yeah, so in a French-speaking country. Obviously, France is not the only option that you have for that, but that's the one that I wanted to choose. And so I had the opportunity to do an internship, and I decided to not choose to go to Paris, partly because a lot of kind of these large cities around the world, they're very similar in the sense that the same types of people are attracted to them.
Yeah.
I don't want that to sound negative because it isn't. It's just an observation.
Yeah.
But that's not what I was looking for when I was searching for an internship.
Mm.
I was interested in a lot of the internships available in the large cities were corporate ones, so in large companies. And I wasn't particularly interested in that because I guess I just don't really have that kind of personality. I'm not very suited to that kind of workplace, I don't think.
So you went to like a small town?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It's
how big?
It's well, for the Chinese people, it'd probably be considered like a tiny village. Yeah.
But
it's like about 25,000 people.
25,000.
25,000. So for China, that I think
that
would be
tiny.
Quite small, yeah.
For France, is
it? For France, it is relatively small, but there are kind of, I think there are quite a few towns that are that size. But even for France, it is relatively small because it's not, even some French people, I think the only reason they would have heard of it is because it has a large viaduct, which was opened by the president. It was inaugurated by the president of France. So they would have heard about
it. Engineering project.
Yeah. It was expensive.
All right. So before you went, you must have had a perception of life in France. For example, if I'm thinking about life in France, I was imagined as a picture-perfect rural areas. You know, you're riding a bike with a baguette. You're wearing something very much like
stripy.
French. Yeah, stripy. Or French, like a French style print. And then you're very stylish and very sort of healthy, fit, that sort of image. What was your perception? And are there any differences between these perception and the actual reality?
I feel like what you've just described is actually relatively similar to what I experienced when I was in Mio, so this small town. So I definitely think it's not representative of lifestyles in France in general, because although you do still have a huge amount of rural areas, I think much more than in Britain, for example, we have similar population sizes, but there's a lot more open space in France. And so you do still have quite a few people living in villages and hamlets around France. But I think if you were to describe that to somebody living in the middle of a large city, they would say that that's not representative of their lifestyles. But just so happens that where I went to live, I think I was probably influenced by this romantic vision of France. And when I saw that an internship that corresponded with the type of job I was looking for, and that
it's in that setting, that idyllic setting that met this
that was very similar to this ideal that we have of rural France, this very romantic ideal, because obviously not all of rural France is romantic and not all aspects of it are romantic. But I do think I found some of that romanticism in this town, in these very old stone buildings with
cobbled streets.
Yeah, cobbled streets, pleasant weather, people with a very healthy work-life balance, lots of artisans, so traditional craftspeople, because the town I was living in was a traditional glove-making town. So craftsmanship and independent boutiques and things like that, they are still thriving, I think, there.
So how lucky that you actually lived in a picture-perfect, almost like straight from living the dream, straight from a novel or a movie scene.
And on that note, let us wrap up this episode. In the next episode, we're going to continue our talk with Sarah, where we're going to delve deeper into French culture and also compare the differences between Britain and France. We'll see you next time.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.